He lives on nothing but zombie takeout. Sleeps on zombie takeout. He wears zombie takeout. So, of course, what does he eat? Welcome to episode 227 of Zombie Takeout, the B-Moving Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, once again, I forgot to mention this in the pre-show, we should talk about the trailer.
Which trailer?
The teaser trailer.
Iron Sky, right?
Episode 7, of course.
Oh, you know what? I'm one of the last people on this planet who has yet to see the trailer.
You haven't seen it.
No.
Okay, then we won't.
It's really funny because I remember back in 99, like spring of 99, us all gathering around a computer at work waiting for Phantom Menace trailer to download because it took a year to download anything, of course. And this one, meh.
I will say I'm very optimistic. It looks great. And there were some surprises. It wasn't what the rumors. A lot of it wasn't what the rumors had suggested. I would recommend seeing it as soon as possible. I don't know how you've avoided it for 2 weeks.
I've been at home, but I've been away for the last 2 weeks, if that makes any sense.
Okay, well, we will diverge to Iron Sky 2. They're doing a Kickstarter. I mentioned it a couple weeks ago on the Facebook page.
But then I saw they have Jesus wielding machine guns.
There have been two trailers, two clips. One was that. One is Hitler on a T-Rex.
And that was pretty cool. Gotta say it. Mm-hmm. But once I saw the Jesus with two machine guns,
yeah, they were going for a whole Nazis at the center of the earth thing. I don't know how that fits in. But they're, like I said, they're doing it. Actually, it's not Kickstarter, it's Indiegogo. There's a link on the Facebook page. I chipped in. I think everyone who can afford to should.
Good God, yes.
We need this movie to happen so that we can review it. And so on to this week's movie without further ado. And it is from 1989, Split. This is a request from Danny Meeks. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by the way, it's here in my package.
And also brought to you by CGI, the early years. It's not a pretty sight.
I swear Tron was better.
Well, come on, though. That was like a multi-million-dollar
movie. This is true.
That had all of Walt Disney behind it.
Yeah, all of the state-of-the-art effects that were in Tron, state-of-the-art for the time, were maybe a little marginally better than the very cheap effects that were in this 5 years later. So.
Right. But this, I mean, I hope you have information on how this is made, because I'm really curious. But anyway.
Don't have a lot of, there's really no trivia.
Really?
No.
Anyway, this is quite the enigma then. Anyway, so we begin with some crazy guy who's walking around with fake Jerry Lewis teeth. He's talking, first you think he's talking at us, the audience. Then you think he's just a random, you know, talking to no one. But it turns out he is actually talking to the man. They have set up hidden cameras, and he is asking them not to follow him. He's living in sort of this homeless world where he just wears disguises, gets his clothes and food and pretty much his whole livelihood from trash cans. Not very clear how long he's been doing this. But for some reason, the government has no record of him anywhere, which is very strange if you think about it.
Especially this government, because it's very much a 1984 situation.
Right. Ah, it's a bit too uncomfortable to watch, actually, because you're like, oh, yeah, huh. But anyway, he's in this diner. He creates a big scene there for some reason, which I'm not sure if there actually is a reason. He just creates a scene. And as the movie goes on, he turns into sort of this cult leader where he has this object that he's going to change the entire, he's going to free the world from this intrusive government.
But he really only has the one sort of follower initially, and then he somehow develops a cult when he's in hiding, even though nobody really knows about him.
Right. In fact, we don't even know his name.
Starker, it's said a few times, but it's hard to.
Well, no. At
Oh, no,
first,
it takes a while to get there,
yeah,
yeah.
and it's not that he introduces himself to anybody as that at first either. They just somehow know his name. Unless I miss something.
No, he didn't.
But the government agents start referring to him as Starker,
Well, the
and
government
somebody else
knows his
just.
name. The government knows his name because they're tracking everybody.
But they went from not having any information on him, not being able to pick him up, him being a ghost.
True, to
And
knowing his name.
this is pretty much the plot summary too. This
Yeah.
works. So yeah, he goes from being this anonymous guy, which I mean, think of how creepy this is, anonymous. You know what I mean? Think about our current terminology and then apply it to this, and you're just it is mind blowing. But anyway, he goes from this anonymous figure to a cult like following that they had him on buttons and stuff, and he's going to release this thing, and it's going to somehow free us from this oppressive government. But I swear to God that that really was a urinal cake that he was holding up to the guy. But anyway, we'll get to some of that later.
Or an IUD, or possibly a container of birth control pills. It had that kind of look. It was a large,
Right.
round disc.
It was just a large round disk. And,
Well, the round disc is kind of redundant, but anyway.
yeah, I guess so. Hey, this is, you should have also said, this is a short stint before we go on Christmas break.
Yeah.
One of two episodes we're doing for the rest of 2014 here. So we're going to be punchy. Anyway, he goes to this art, actually after the scene at the restaurant, yes, he goes to this art showing, and he talks to the artists, and they sort of have this mind-bending trip, and where I guess it's almost like a vision quest they go on for a little bit. I'm not really even sure how that all ends. How, like, they get separated somehow in that,
It
in the
was,
vision.
I think it was caused by the disc that is either a mutated virus or a device. I'm not sure. They're not sure. Because they say both at different times.
Yes,
And I
they're
think it
not
was
really
caused
sure.
by that. I don't know what brought him out of it. Maybe it just wore off.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess their minds have been expanded, but they went their separate ways. He then goes on the run again because they've almost caught up to him. He winds up hiding in the waitress from the diner scene earlier on, and who has it then turns into like this absurdist kind of one act just stuck in the middle of this movie where the woman is talking about her husband who doesn't really exist, who's in the other room, and he's talking about the way again. And when I say the way, of course, it's to get out from under this hamster wheel that we're all stuck on. This is actually a perfect companion piece to that movie that only I got to see, the
Nothing Lasts Forever, it was
nothing,
called.
yeah, I believe that's what the Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd one. But yeah, he so it all goes to shit, of course, because the government fine tracks him down there. There's a lot of chasing from the government agent, people with sunglasses who are, of course, government agents, because that's what government agents do. If they just took off the sunglasses, no one would suspect they were government agents. But that's what you do when you have a no budget and you want to suggest government agents. So, he, meanwhile, there is this, the evil overseer, Big Brother himself, throughout this movie, has been trying to find a way to immortality, because he's getting older. He's sort of half man, half machine,
At some
literally.
point, eventually, it's never really established before it starts happening, which is odd.
Well, doesn't it? It either appears that way, or he did not have legs. That he was just from the waist up human, waist
Possibly.
down machine, it seemed like.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the transformation at the end, which we'll get to.
And then, yes, he goes on this, but they. In part of that, he wants to have his he's going to have his thoughts and memories transplanted onto someone else, and it turns out to be Starker disguised as a black woman, which fails.
Well, they don't necessarily say that.
Hadn't thought of that.
They never establish whether or not it worked.
I thought it failed because he's pretending to be him at first, and the guy is then like, "You idiot,
They
it's
throw
not
him out,
really."
yeah.
Yeah, so then they throw him out because of that.
It's never established concretely.
All right, let's be honest here. Nothing in this movie is established concretely.
This is true. Fair point.
There's nothing concrete in
The main
this movie.
character's name is Starker. That's the only thing that's really established.
Right, that's it. That's all we know. That's all we know for sure. His name was Starker. And so yeah, they throw him out, not capture him, but they throw him out. And they wind up chasing after him, and
Then
there's this
possibly the trippiest moment in the entire movie.
yes, very, very trippy-ass moment through the whole movie, and hilarity ensues. Damn,
Yeah.
that was harder than I thought it was going to be.
I really enjoyed the beginning and the end. All the stuff in the middle got horribly boring for me. And a movie that tries to be this weird and trippy should not get boring.
Well, I think I was entertained because I didn't know what the fuck was going to happen next, and it was a very refreshing.
I didn't either. There's actually no plot summary online for this one.
Well, there you have it. The first time ever someone has done a plot summary on Split. Thank you very much. You're welcome.
And I like how it starts off very jarring. He looks straight into the camera in that first scene and
Right.
tells the audience to go away.
Yes. He does. He violates pretty much the first rule of any sort of entertainment by telling the audience to get the fuck out. Literally,
Right
did
off the
that
top.
yes, get stop following me, mind your own fucking business, get out. I mean,
The only time I've seen anybody come close to that was Rubber when they kill off the audience.
yes.
But this one actually goes a step further and just tells the audience to go away.
Yes.
And then, again, right at the beginning, they establish the surveillance Big Brother angle, which was
I think
nice.
the dude that did Rubber was definitely a big fan of this.
Yeah, probably.
Because yeah, there was a lot of Rubber in this. It's I really funny, and this might be the first time we've come across this. Are you looking at the IMDb page
Not
for
at the
this
moment,
movie?
no.
When you look at the cast listing of this, you only see one person with an actual picture
Ah.
in the whole fucking cast, the crew, anybody, the writer, the director. Nobody has done anything else except
Gene Evans?
no.
Oh, because that's the one piece of trivia I have. It's the final film appearance of Gene Evans. He plays a preacher somewhere in the movie, an evangelist. He has a considerable filmography.
Oh, well, I don't think he's even listed on the IMDb as
Okay, maybe
the
he's
initial
not. Um,
he
he's
was
done a lot of westerns. He's worked since like the 40s.
So
He
he just
had.
had the he wasn't actually in, he was just kind of like his voice.
Okay.
Like she was watching 700 Club in the
Right,
apartment,
right.
and that was him. But no,
Okay, makes
credited
sense, yeah.
the people in the movie, Deborah Gordon is a cafe customer, and she's had some bit parts from like Flashdance till the present, but that's it. Like she was just cafe customer, the one who was all bitchy at the beginning to the waitress.
Also, the woman on the beach was not credited. I wanted to know who that was.
I assume there was somebody credited as Good Girl.
Okay, maybe that was her.
I don't know. Interesting woman, interesting in quotes.
Now, the problem with the beginning of the movie, and not my problem with the movie in general, but it takes a bit too long to explain who Starker is.
They never explain who Starker is.
They establish about 15 minutes in when they say he lives in garbage, he wears garbage, etc. You get the idea, okay, he's trying to stay off the grid. And he's in all of these disguises for that
Right.
reason.
Right.
They don't even say that at first. He's just some guy with bad teeth.
Right. Like, you didn't even know if the teeth were real or not, really. I mean, you knew those were fake teeth, but you didn't know if they were
The character's teeth, yeah.
the character's teeth or if he was wearing the character's wearing fake teeth until he took them off. Because I'm sitting there thinking, God, if those are supposed to be his real teeth, fuck this movie. And then it was like, no, but no, they never explain who Starker is.
Well, he's
They
just
don't
someone who's
take.
trying to stay off the grid. He's the loose thread that they can't tie up.
I agree. They did take too long to establish who Starker is. They took well over an hour and 40 minutes.
Hour 24, actually.
Hour 24, you're right.
Yeah, he's just the random loose thread that this totalitarian, surveillance-heavy government can't tie up. They can't track him. That's why they don't like him. That's why they're going after him.
Well, yeah, first they were wondering whether they should really go after him or not, whether he was worth their time, and then they realized if he's had this ability to evade them for this long, then yes, they need to figure out what the fuck he is.
Even though they suddenly know his name, which was a good catch. I hadn't thought about that.
Well, right, it just went into it, and suddenly everyone knew his name.
Not just everyone, the government.
Yes.
I mean, he was in a disguise, but they figured out how to take away the disguise and get to his real face,
Yeah.
and they still couldn't quite identify him until about 10 minutes later.
I meant to look up facial recognition software and what point they were actually at back in 89
It
for
was,
this.
I think, starting. I think a lot of the technology in this movie and a lot of the sort of government surveillance stuff, it was well underway by 84.
Well, this was 89.
89, sorry, Freudian slip there. It was well underway by 89. I mean, it wasn't obviously to the point where it is now, which is very close to where it is in the movie. But it was an underway. There's nothing prophetic here. They just saw a trend that was already happening.
But he hit it close enough that it is just kind of like, wow.
Well, it's just that we're watching it far enough in the future that it is really close to where we are.
Yeah, he was not far off the mark. I mean, he didn't anticipate people voluntarily being watched
Right.
by Big Brother, but who did, you know?
Well, there are the what do they call them? Not spies, but agents. In the credits, they're listed as agents. There are about four
Yeah.
or five people who are working for the government. So that you could say that they're volunteering to be followed. One thing I wanted to point out before I got to my issue with the movie, I did think the use of the storyboards was a nice touch.
Oh yes, that's in my notes too. Holy shit, I love that. That was funny as fuck.
You see the storyboards of the scene you're watching. I think it's in the gallery or shortly thereafter.
Yeah, it's in the gallery scene and when he's talking with the artist. And it was just, we need to break out of this somehow. We're stuck in this predestined thing.
And they notice that they're following the storyboards exactly.
Right.
And I think it may have been a bit ahead of its time in the self-awareness,
Holy shit, yes.
but that's the sort of thing was being done with, Kentucky Fried Movie did it, Amazon Women did it. There were self-aware moments. This one took it further than, a lot of movies had at the time. The point where it lost me was in the later scene with the artist, when he's going on his diatribe about what's wrong with the government. We've all heard that stuff before. There isn't an original thought in the movie. I kind of had an issue with the, anti-science pro-chaos angle, just a personal issue with that. But it's really just 84 and Brave New World combined at that point. He goes on the run. He is the noble savage. But he's, running away like, or trying to get away like Winston Smith. And the scene where the waitress sleeps with him, total noble savage moment there.
Yeah.
That's the only reason she was attracted to him. And what kept stopping her from throwing him out? Because she threatens to throw him out like three times.
Oh, at least. At least every how many times she was like done with him.
But for some reason she just let him stay.
Well, that whole segment is just so fucking weird with him and the waitress. Well, first of all, it's weird that he meets back up with her. I mean,
yeah, well, that's, you know, happenstance. That's a convenient way to give him a place to stay, really.
Right. It could have been with anyone, though. It could have been with someone different. Instead, you know, it's with her again. And
a lack of cast.
Well, yeah, like I said, there's only one professional in the whole fucking movie. And that wasn't her.
Although she is credited with writing all of her dialogue and additional dialogue.
You get the feeling there was a lot of improvisation here.
Yeah.
Like that whole diner scene was just him fucking improvising.
And you also get the feeling that all of the disguises weren't so much plot points as they were excuses for Timothy Dwight, who played Starker, to show off his acting.
Yeah. But yeah, the part with the waitress is one of the weirdest in the movie because it's so mundane, and you almost think he's going to fall into the trap of becoming a consumerist and rejoining the grid, you know? Like he's going to just set up house with her. You almost think that's going to happen.
I never thought that was going to happen.
I did. I thought that was it. He was just going to forget about his whole thing. Because really, I mean, who knew where this was going?
The only time I was at all questioning where it was going was when the consciousness switching thing happened.
Right.
When the villain, who I don't believe had a name, his consciousness ended up in Stark, or maybe didn't, we don't know.
They just referred to him as agency director.
Okay.
Who was, of course, played by Chris Shaw, the writer and director of the movie.
Of course. I think it would have been really interesting if it had ended up in Starker, if he had become what he despised.
Yeah, what makes you think, though, that it might have worked?
They'd never established that it didn't. You know, maybe it was the agency director barking those orders through Starker when it first happened. Maybe it wasn't. We don't know. You know, it's never concrete established. It probably didn't, since he did go back to running away and did accidentally disperse the virus.
Well, I don't think he accidentally did it. I thought that was his goal, wasn't it?
He was going to put it in the water, but somehow ended up in a cornfield. I don't know why you'd be in a cornfield if you're putting it in the water mains.
I thought it went into the water.
Well, he was at a pond that the agency director in his lab could somehow reach through.
Well, yeah, that is really the ultimate mind fuck in the end.
After the agency director had somehow turned into a robot.
I loved that visual at the end of having the fight through the fucking pond like that, with the water above and the water below, and it kind of makes you wonder if that whole cornfield was really just like in the lab itself, you know.
Interesting. Okay, that's another angle. It doesn't quite explain gravity, but I'm looking for a logical explanation for it.
Right.
Which I'm not going to get.
You can't, no. Because they never explain who Starker is.
And I think that by and large is why it bugged me, because it just made no
sense.
Really? I did like the idea that, to me, it read like they were struggling. You know, they each had a hand through the other, you know, way at different times. And it seemed like he just lost hold of the disc and it sprayed open.
Well, right. It's very confusing at the end as to what happened. Was he successful or was he not? It went everywhere. But did it go in the water too? Did it matter? Did it need to go in the water? Because, I mean, what?
It went into the air, so I guess it's a powder, so I guess it can disperse, but it seems like if you want to put it into the water supply, you're not going to be at a little pond near a cornfield.
And what was it?
The way?
Yes.
It was some kind of psychoactive drug or virus that it broke the control of the government, even though they said it was a device earlier.
Right.
And can we talk about the agency director suddenly having his face peel off and having a robot underneath? If that was going to happen, why did he need to transfer his consciousness?
I think It was his body, the organic matter of his body decaying.
Oh, symbolism, got it.
Yeah.
He was becoming the machine, got it.
He was trying to get the consciousness out before the organic matter decayed.
Then they didn't establish that he was actually just dying. It
Yeah.
wasn't an age, normal death thing. It was the machine taking him over.
Well, I don't even know if it was a symbolism thing. I mean, they explained that he was dying and he needed to get out before he died. And, the first thing was try to get another organic host for him.
And the death was, instead of a normal death, it was turning into the machine.
And when that failed, it was to integrate more computer into him. And yeah, that was his, all of his organic matter dying away.
Okay, I missed the part where they talked about trying to integrate more machine into him.
Well, they didn't say that, but you could clearly say that, they were trying to keep him
Oh,
alive.
yeah.
The goal was immortality, and if you can't get it into another organic host, which I guess it just failed, you just can't do it. It's what they learned from not, getting into Starker.
And everything from, that scene where Starker may or may not have turned into the agency director, the consciousness switching scene, through the end, that stuff I liked too. Everything up through, the gallery scene and then that ending I liked. Everything in the middle, mostly with the waitress, it was just boring rehash of ideas from 1984 and Brave New World. And this whole, we're losing our souls to science thing. That just bored the hell out of me.
Like I said, it was an absurdist play.
It wasn't that absurdist. He was just whining about his ideals.
Yeah, it was
And she
because
was
they were.
falling for the noble savage, which is straight out of 90, of 84. Or Brave New World, sorry.
She had this husband that didn't exist. She was. He was.
I think she probably just told him that so that he would think that there was another guy there and not attack her. I don't know, it didn't seem all that absurd to me.
Well, then when it was obvious that he didn't exist. He was going on that maybe he did exist. It was very, very strange. It was strange to have the whole thing in the middle of this government's out to get him thing to just suddenly have this strange domestic quarrel in the middle of it all.
I don't know, it bored me. I almost tapped out, to be honest, during that part.
Really, I don't even think it was that long.
It was, let's see, hour 24. The beginning was, say, about 15 minutes before it got, 15, 20 before it got boring. And then the last 10, it was about an hour.
Because it was
It
probably
was the
about
middle
what? It
third.
was about 10 to 15 for like the diner.
No, it was maybe a half hour. My math was slightly off.
Yeah.
It was about 45 minutes of good stuff, of the big top and bottom, and then maybe 45 in the middle of that got boring for me.
Because then you had, let's see, diner,
A gallery,
art gallery,
apartment,
beach,
beach briefly.
and then a few alley, crazy alley scenes too.
He's on the run after the beach scene.
Right. And then the apartment, and then we have more alley
And
scenes.
he lives there for a while until the consciousness switching scene.
After the government gets her, he goes to get them. And then, yeah, the consciousness switching scene in the last maybe 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes of the film.
It just bored me in the middle.
I thought there was a lot of interesting camera work too for a guy who I have no idea what else this guy has done.
Probably not much else since this was clearly a first film and it didn't do well, so he probably didn't bother with another.
Like, IMDb does not give him any credits.
This is probably all he's done.
Right. He has a few acting credits, like he did a TV movie the same year, and then he did something else like a few like 5 years ago.
Okay, so he had industry connections. He wasn't random guy who made a indie film.
I don't know. And then like he, but it's like 20 years between this and what else he's done.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't make any sense. Like he edited something else 5 years ago. That's it, though. So I thought there was a lot of unique camera work. He had to have been a film student somewhere to have done this.
I do think this was the product of film school. He wasn't a complete amateur.
Yeah, there's no way in hell he'd be an amateur to do this.
And there was definitely an effects budget, not just the CG. And I do think I remember reading somewhere, though I couldn't find it when I went back to look, that this was the first use of CG.
Really?
But I'm not sure about that. I think I remember reading that somewhere. But not just the CG, the skin peeling effects and a lot of the sets were clearly, there was clearly some money put into them.
As low budget as this was, think about some of the effects that other movies have used from this. I mean, that silver thing was pretty much Mr. Freeze in Batman and Robin.
They just painted him silver, is basically what it comes down to. Was it the same actor? Was it Chris Shaw as the robot? Because he looked very different.
Yeah, I think that was him.
Okay. Maybe he just had a ton of makeup on as the agency director.
Yeah. My favorite shot, though, that they probably did was the art gallery with the champagne glasses. I liked how they lined up through the glasses, and they would put other glasses in front of the camera, and it kind of changed the perspective, and then poured the champagne in right up front.
The cinematography was interesting. I have do have to give it that.
Right, for people that have no other experience, it's just mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling that they didn't do anything else after this, honestly.
Particularly Chris Shaw as a camera operator, cinematographer, if not as a director.
Definitely. Why wouldn't you hire this guy? I mean, I'm very curious to find out what the hell he's
Yeah.
been doing all these years.
All right, I would say onto sequels and remakes, but there haven't been any of either, and I don't see any of that happening.
I could see a remake of this.
I don't
Someone.
think it's anywhere near big enough. There would have to be somebody with a name who was a fan of it to try a remake.
I mean, what if they did a larger budget remake of this? You could say they have remade it with a lot of other,
Well,
paranoid, guy being enemy of the state kind of
but
movies.
this was far from the originator of those ideas, as I've pointed out multiple times, Brave New World,
True.
1984. And I'm sure there were movies of that nature before this, too. And no studio is going to, I think, want to touch a remake that, A, is this close to where we actually are. And if they do a proper remake, would be that weird. Because, weird movies don't get made anymore, unless they're completely independent. I mean, somebody could do an indie remake, but I don't think you'd hear anything about it.
I mean, honestly, major studios, I could take or leave at
Well,
this point,
agreed, absolutely. In most cases, certainly. But I'm just saying, the only remake is going to be indie, and I don't know if that will get the attention. All right, on to brains.
Out of brains.
Like I said, I like the beginning and the end. The middle bored the hell out of me. I'm going to go 3.
I'm going for there's a really cool DIY thing you got to admire. There's God damn. I mean, this is before we were talking about NSA or any
Yeah.
it just to see this today and just how on he was, it is just amazing and worth seeing. And the only reason why I'm not going all the way, of course, is because I'm not really sure what the fuck happened in the end.
See, I liked that about it. I mean, I would have
Yes.
preferred it if Starker had turned into the agency director, but I do like the ambiguity.
I mean, I like it too, but of course, if I don't know what it means, I'm not going to quite buy go all the way for the five.
Fair, fair. All right, and what have we learned?
Sometimes you can really wear silver well,
It's true. And I learned that apparently brains are made of cherry jello.
Oh, really?
You remember the scene with the brain and the
Yes,
jello?
I do.
All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing Tokyo Godfathers, I am so looking forward to this one. You said, we had 2 weeks till vacation. I had 1 week until this movie. We're recording this on a Wednesday. I watched it last Friday because I couldn't wait, and I am still desperately anxious to watch it again next week for the show.
Does he make him an offer he can't refuse?
Not those kind of Godfathers.
Oh no.
It's an anime Christmas film. It's our Christmas episode. I don't want to overhype it, so I'll leave it there. Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review up through late February, up until actually the third week of February, the week before my birthday. We actually have that all lined up, so we've got a week off after Donnie Darko. Because my birthday's on a Wednesday, and I'm not doing a show on my birthday.
God damn, you have, you're thinking far ahead.
Well, that's what we have lined up. We've got Tokyo Godfathers, then a few weeks off, and then the Resident Evil movies, and then Donnie Darko. And yeah, then it's my birthday the next week.
All right.
So we're good through February. You'll also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, like Danny Meeks did, leave it on the request form. We'll get to it. And
of course, thank you, Danny.
And, of course, the recommendations list. I was tempted to go forward just to say you should see it, but I just didn't quite hit that mark for me. It just got too boring. You could also email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged.
They can definitely go fuck themselves.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be coming from the middle of Milwaukee, and until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
What you say may be incomprehensible and boring, but that doesn't make it true.
LA Times reviewed this in 91, and they still have it on their website, too.
Wow. Two years after it was made, which is the odd.
Yeah. And they say humanoids from another... in the near future, in which humanoids from another dimension control our every act and thought, while letting us think we possess free will. And this is Kevin Thomas, the staff writer at the time of the LA Times, who most likely... They you know, go through staff that quickly. I doubt he's still there.
But when did they establish the other dimension part?
I don't know. That does explain, as you pointed out, that explains the lake and the other thing.
Yeah, the scene in the pond where they're reaching through. We were discussing this off air, and I decided we had to record this just to get that out there. Because that scene makes sense now, if they were from another dimension. And, I mean, at that point, it's, you know, any sufficient technology is indistinguishable from magic. So anything they could have gotten away with, they could have explained by they were from another dimension, including the turning into a robot. I don't know where that's established in the movie, but it explains a hell of a lot.
Shaw is a mathematician by profession.
Interesting.
With 4 textbooks to his credit. Because the title films refers to, and I'm going to fuck this up, bifurcation?
Something theory? Being cut in half, that's bifurcation.
Right, which apparently means that events can go either of 2 unpredictable ways.
Ah. The whole chaos theory thing. You talk about chaos in the movie.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So all it takes, he's suggesting in the movie, according to the reviewer at least, that it takes for one man to believe in a dream for it to accrue power, and then for that individual to collect a following to make it come true. You can see it, because it is kind of like, it is the power of myth. You know, if everybody believes it, it is going to, you know, you'll at least think it's true, or at least believe it closely enough.
Yeah, that actually helps my opinion of the movie a little bit, because it did achieve that. I'm still not willing to change my rating, because there is that horribly boring section in the middle, but that does explain a lot.
So, actually, why not explain what your problem was with chaos against... I didn't really view it as anti-science.
Well, he flat out says, you know, the Loop talks about the religion of science. You know, how it's a jealous god. And I took some umbrage to that, and I just personally have some issues with chaos. I'm not a fan. But that didn't affect my rating. That's just, you know...
Yeah.
I did take some issue with the anti-science angle.
I mean, I don't know how anti-science it is as much as anti... authoritarianism, of course.
Well, it's definitely anti-authoritarianism and anti, you know, Big Brother. But...
And the only reason why you would be against science would be because of the tool. That's the tool that's being used against us in the end.
And it's the dehumanizing of people, which is, you know, shown by the director turning into a robot.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about with the symbolism. But like I said, that didn't affect my rating. It was really just boring enough to put to take a brain off in the middle.
He ends the review with, "We are definitely going to hear again from these people and others involved in the singularly venturesome film."
Yeah.
But the question is, why haven't we?
I think possibly because it wasn't successful enough.
It was a fucking student film, practically, or a professorial film
Yeah, true.
in this case.
Maybe Shaw just decided he wanted to write textbooks instead.
Yeah, I mean, these are not professional filmmakers here. He had some budget because, I mean, he hired the one professional actress, and I imagine the other people in this got paid some too. So there was a budget going on here, but fuck. We want more.
I'll pass on more. Once was enough for me.
I think if he had some sort of budget, we could be seeing some crazy shit from this guy.
True, yeah. But we've got Shane. We don't need him.
I wonder if Shane was a fan of this too.
Possibly. That I could say.
Because the dialogue did have a very upstream, well, yeah, a very, not upstream, a very a very primer
Yeah.
feel to it.
As you put it, Mamedian, when we reviewed it.
And very strange overdubbing too.
Yeah.
But I think we've gone on enough.
See you next week.